Hey guys, before we start the episode today, I just wanted to take a minute to thank you guys so much for downloading and listening to The Threshold. We've gotten so many amazing comments from different people who are being impacted by this show, who are learning that they can have conversations about these things that really matter. People from completely different backgrounds, completely different walks of life. And it's been so great to get your feedback, your input, your thoughts, your questions. And we're really looking forward to engaging you more and more in the future. Two things I'd love to have you consider is just sticking around to the end of this episode to hear us talk a little bit about our Patreon page. Patreon's a way that you can support the work that the podcast is doing with a monetary gift. But more than that, if you can't donate anything, if you don't want to donate anything, that's totally fine. We'd love to have you go over and check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/thethresholdpodcast, and consider joining our new discussion group. It's going to be a place where we post each week's episode and that we can get your feedback, your input, your insights, the good, true, and beautiful things that you take away from the conversations. And we would love to have you be a part of that conversation on Facebook if you're able. If not, you can always drop us a line any other way. But here we go with this week's episode with Anna Carter. Hey, come on in. I really feel like we've reached a place in our culture where religious conversations can seem tense or even taboo. So every week, I invite a different guest to sit down with me to talk about what they believe, what shaped that belief, and why it matters. My name's Tony Vicenda, and this is The Threshold. Welcome back, everybody. This is Tony Vicenda, and I am so excited to share with you guys my conversation with Anna Carter. Anna is somebody that I ran into online a little while ago. We've had a couple of different phone conversations. And the thing that I love about Anna is just that she's onto something. Anna understands more clearly than a lot of people my age, her age, older than us, who she is, how she was made, and what it means to be in a relationship with people around her. So I'm really excited to sit down and talk about what really matters with Anna Carter. Hey, Anna, how's it going today?
Hey, Tony, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I am doing good. It was Epiphany Sunday at my parish. Father Parish, my co-host, did a really great homily. Anna, tell people a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, great. So, well, my name is Anna. I am Midwest, not born, but definitely raised. And I've worked in ministry for a number of years. And currently I'm running a nonprofit called Eden Invitation. I also enjoy whiskey, road trips, and leaving my Christmas tree up way too long.
Now, here's the thing. There are two options with Christmas trees in the Catholic tradition, and that's Epiphany, which is today for people who are listening to this in real time, which is only me, you, and my family. The other one is Candlemas, which is like another month from now. So, then you just ahead after that. Then it's just like I'm leaving this up for next year. So how long do you usually leave? How long do you usually leave your Christmas tree up?
So growing up, it was always Epiphany. Since I've had my own place, it's definitely been, February 2nd, though there's one year, I am not so embarrassed to admit that it actually was left up into Lent. However, all of the decorations were taken off before Ash Wednesday, but I didn't have very good overhead lighting in that house. And I live by myself. And so it functioned as a really nice, like kind of warm, soft lighting, like an additional lamp. I mean, why go out and buy a lamp when you could have just a bare fake pine tree as a source of warmth and festivity?
That is an excellent point. And then you could there's this tradition called the Jesse tree. I don't know if you're familiar with it, where during Lent, people will hang different symbols of the Lenten journey on a tree. Usually it's a really bare
Advent
tree. Is that Advent? I don't know.
You can just do it any season. It's Jesus' lineage and then he's born.
I feel like you could do it in a different season also. just change the name of the tree seasonally. This is in honor of Arbor Day. This is in honor of Earth Day. This is in honor of my birthday. You know, whatever it is, you just update the tree to reflect whatever's currently going on in your life and in your world. Awesome. So I want to ask you a couple questions to help people get to know you a little bit better. Some of them are light. Some of them are a little bit serious. But what is the best meal you ever had? What did you eat? Where did you have it? And who did you eat it with?
Ooh, okay. I am pretty basic in this regard. The first thing that comes to mind is this hamburger from a local restaurant called the River West Filling Station. And it's slightly overpriced, but it's worth it, especially if you only go once in a while. So it's just, I don't know what they have in the meat patties, but they are amazing. And it's just, it's bacon and avocado and some kind of like chipotle aioli situation. It's called the California Burger. If you ever go, it's really good.
Nice. No, that's awesome. Is there somebody who you enjoy going there with? Is there a time that you really remember there that kind of stands out at you as your first, like a really good experience of just sitting down and having a satisfying moment in time?
You know, I actually feel really blessed that the neighborhood that I live in, like, actually has a lot of friends, and we can walk to each other's houses, and we can like walk to a bar, we can walk to this restaurant. And so I don't actually have a precise memory, but, I feel like people don't get that anymore. Like, people live in all sorts of different neighborhoods and suburbs, and you have to drive to each other. Like, here, like, it's kind of like in Friends, you actually can walk to the Central Perk and just see people there, you know? So I don't have a specific memory.
All six straight white, white upper middle class people who should never be able to afford these apartments in New York City.
True. That's true. Okay. So it's not quite like that. The neighborhood itself kind of has like this, it's a mix of like kind of the grungy hipsters, also like the Polish people that never left and their grandparents came here a few generations ago. And then random yuppies and like random people like kind of at the poverty line because rent's pretty cheap. So it actually is a decently diverse neighborhood. But yeah, so no specific memory, but definitely that specific group of people.
Yeah. No, there's this concept. I love that you're talking about like just people living near each other and in community, because there's this concept really that America is the first culture that when things started to expand, rather than growing up, which most historic, like we'll build a second story, like numerous families will live in one house. We'll all live near each other and near the things we need. We spread out. Like, you go to Europe, there's, you know, everything is numerous stories, like everything, you know, all major cities. It's like, you could walk anywhere you need to get anything you need. And people nowadays, you know, they spend 2 or 3 hours a day in their car driving from place to place. And I think that's crazy. So it's really cool to hear people who have that and who see kind of the good of that, of just being able to say like, this is my neighborhood and this is the place where I live. So I love that something that you have, and there's not just like one moment that you can name that, but that's something that actually like surrounds you. That's really awesome. What do you think is the relationship between art and the soul? Like, when you see something beautiful, or when you see a beautiful work of art, or listen to a beautiful piece of music, what do you think is the impact it has on the soul?
Mm. Yeah. I mean, the first word that comes to mind is transcendent. You know, I've heard people talk about how beauty almost like has the power to take you into itself in a way Yeah, if you're experiencing something really beautiful, I mean, I'm sure we've all had that experience. I hope we've all had that experience of watching, whether it's like watching a really good film or play or listening to a really good song. And for those moments, like, your surroundings kind of one of two, either they melt away, right? Because you're just kind of enthralled by this beautiful thing, or I mean, they could also be enhanced. Like, they also have the ability to like enhance the present moment and to help you see it as more than it is, right? Or more, or really maybe for what it truly is. I mean, you think of like a really good road trip mix, right? All of a sudden, like, the cornfields of Kansas don't just feel like the end of the earth is like right like 5 miles away on the other side of the corn, you know? But the sun can seem brighter, the sky seems bluer. And I think it puts you in touch, with, Yeah, like I think it just, it heightens your senses of the beauty that's around you, first of all, depending on the situation. Or again, if it's like a movie or a play or something where maybe your surroundings aren't quite as heightened, but it brings you in a particular way to its message, to its narrative, to its theme, and kind of lifts you out of whatever you were bringing into that theater, and shows you something.
So let me ask you another, I love that. Let me ask you something. What are three songs that are on your cross country road trip mix?
Ooh, great question. Okay. So I am kind of basic. I admit it. I don't have these like really deep indie tracks that I go to, but, I really like Lord Huron for road trips. I mean, to the ends of the earth. I mean, that's quite a nice, literal run for road trips, but, yeah, huge fan of Lord Huron. I also, I'm really into, I just really like Stephanie Gretzinger and Amanda Cook of Bethel both released their own albums independently. And they both have, I'm totally blanking on the actual songs that I like, but they each have some really good ones that are about the sense of like journey and like moving beyond the space where you are. Mm. So look those up, people, if you want to. I can't remember the songs right now. Gosh. And then, I mean, you've got to have a good like 90s mix or something. I mean, course, I have to listen to Mbop. I have to.
Oh, that's awesome. Some old school Hanson in the middle of that. That's so great. That's awesome. So let's ask a classic one. If you could have any one superpower, what superpower would you have?
Oh, that's easy. Stop time.
Yeah.
Freeze it. Yeah. There's like so much to do and 24 hours is not enough. So I'd stop time.
How many hours a day do you think you would stop time for?
It depends on what I need to get done. Or maybe I would stop time to take a nap or to sleep and then to like get back and rally. I just think, there's so many books to read. I'm starting, you know, my own nonprofit. There's so much to get done. There's so many like friends to see, you know, you want to take time to pray. You want to actually sleep. You want to exercise. And there's just not enough time. So no. Also the power I think would include whoever I was like touching could also stop time too. Cause then I think you'd have a lot more time for great, like quality one-on-one conversations. You wouldn't feel so harried, be able to really like invest.
Yeah.
And then you'd also give other people the benefit. If someone else was super stressed, like if you have a friend that's like in grad school or working on their PhD and they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so stressed. You'd be like, hey dude, we're just going to stop time. I'm going to bring a book of my own, so don't worry about me. You do you, you get your paper done, and then we'll move on.
I feel like if I had that ability, like a year later, people would be like, Tony, you look like you've gotten really old. Like, cause I would be like, I would experience 5 or 6 years in that year.
Oh, like, that's a good point. Oh
my gosh. I don't know why.
You could totally get into this like Rip Van Winkle situation.
I just slept for 600 of your years. That's awesome. So the crux question we want to discuss here on The Threshold is just kind of what people believe, why they believe it and why that matters. So if somebody came up to you on the street and just said, hey, in a couple minutes, could you tell me what you believe? How would you respond to that person?
What I believe. I think the first thing I would say is who I believe in. And kind of like pivot the question. Because I think my beliefs lie not so much in like abstract ideas about the way the universe works or the way we treat each other, but more relational, right? So I believe in a God who created out of love. I believe that everything that we see around us in the physical world was originally, you know, intended as an outpouring of that gift of the Creator, and that the human person is a part of that, right? Is a part of that dance, is a part of that rhythm, is a part of that beauty. And that we're invited to participate, right? That that the outpouring love of God, I believe we were created in that image and in that likeness. And so we too are invited in to pour out ourselves in love, like in love of God, in love of one another, in respect for the rest of the world that is around us. And I also believe that things don't always look like they're supposed to in the beginning, and that human beings have kind of lost that original innocence, but that this outpouring love of God poured out again 2,000 years ago in a human person named Jesus, and that person's life, death, and ultimately resurrection from the dead was kind of this sign and symbol and also actualization of our own potential, our own possibility to overcome suffering and evil and death and be invited into new life. And that for some crazy reason, this God has decided that instead of just handing that to us without any of our choice in the matter, that we actually get to participate in inviting other people to new life. We actually get to participate by, again, that outpouring of our life of love, that we get to, just invite other people to participate in that same community of love and sacrifice, right? Because it's not a perfect world, so love requires sacrifice.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I could keep going.
That's great. Yeah, it's great.
I used to teach religion, so I could go for a long time.
If somebody asked you what religion you were, how would you respond to that?
I would say I'm Catholic. That's a lot shorter.
So now, did you grow up Catholic? Was faith and always part of your life? Tell me a little bit about how kind of this belief that you just articulated, how that came to be.
Yeah, so I was raised Catholic. Faith was very important in my home. So we went to church on Sundays. We participated in, we didn't have a Jesse tree, but we did participate in some of those traditions, those of the different religious seasons. Went to Catholic grade school, Catholic high school. And so I was definitely surrounded by it growing up, in a very kind of standard traditional way. However, I also had the opportunity in high school to encounter a more evangelistic strain of Catholicism that really focused on outreach to youth, that really focused on that personal relationship with Christ as really foundational and our own ability that we can actually know Jesus personally, right? That to be Catholic, yes, there are these structures, there are these traditions that are very rich and very robust and beautiful. But at the heart of that is a person, right? Is the person of Jesus who actually can be known and can be loved, and we can receive his love as well.
So you had this experience, you keep on talking about the fact that you believe Jesus is a person who you can have a personal relationship with. Do you believe you have a personal relationship with Jesus?
I do.
Do you know, when was the first time you maybe became aware of that relationship?
It was actually a pretty young age, which I'm really grateful for. I was at a youth conference. So like I mentioned, kind of this evangelistic outreach oriented event. And, Catholic my whole life, and Catholics, you know, we believe that, that when Jesus at the Last Supper, he consecrated, you know, he took this bread and wine and he said, "This is my body, this is my blood." And as Catholics, we believe that at Mass every Sunday, that actually is represented and reenacted, and that in a mystical way, that really is Jesus, that really is God. I've been going to church like that all my life, but there's this practice in Catholicism called Eucharistic Adoration, where some of the bread, the host that has been consecrated at a Sunday Mass or a Mass during the week, is placed kind of in this golden thing that presents the Eucharist. And you can see it, right? So you can look, you can gaze for an extended period of time upon this host, which I think if you weren't a Catholic and you walked in the room, you'd be like, what are all these people doing staring at this gold thing? The gold thing is really just to, it's called a monstrance, and it's really just to show due honor and reverence and a sign that what's here is not ordinary bread. It's not just an ordinary thing. And to clarify,
like, it looks kind of like a sunburst, like for people who may be wondering, like, what does this thing look like?
Yes.
Usually it's like kind of circular, looks kind of like a sunburst. And there's a spot in the middle where you can place and see the host. And I actually have a lot of friends who have walked into it. And it's really interesting to see the varied responses based on just kind of who people are, on how they receive what it is to walk into adoration. Like, some of them have no idea what's going on, but are deeply moved. Like, this is an immense moment of spiritual presence, even if they're not Christian or not Catholic, which is always interesting. Other people who are Catholic who have never experienced it before are like, this is weird. So it, like, it takes all kinds of people during that time. And everybody I know who's walked into it without knowing has had very different reactions. And so, but yeah, so you had this moment of actually spending time in adoration.
Yeah. Thanks for that clarification. That's a good point. And so I was in adoration. It was the first time I had ever been. And it was at this conference, you know, so there was music and obviously things that kind of amp up your emotions a little bit. But, you know, I just remember, like, looking at the monster, just staring at it and just feeling, you know, just convicted for the first time really in my life. Like, whoa, like, if this is actually Jesus, if this is actually God, like, wow, you know, that what a religion this is, that, like, the God of all of the universe who, like, spins the galaxies into motion and designs, like, the complexities of DNA, decides to, like, be bread and just, like, chill there for us to stare at him or for us to smash him to the ground if we wanted to, like, what humility. And I think it just, like, drove home for me, like, no, like, God, if God does that, like, then God actually, like, wants to be with me, right? God actually wants to be known by me. And I also felt known. I don't really know how to describe it, but I mean, I was definitely going through, like, teenage angsty time, like every human being. And you know, I felt very unseen for a variety of reasons. And I just felt this, like, wave. Like, I just felt loved. Like, I just felt seen. Like, I felt like there was a person, even though no one was in front of me, like, shaking my hand and looking me in the eye, you know, in a tangible way, like we would think of interacting with a person. I just felt so known in that moment. And, you know, after that, I started to pray more. I started to pay more attention at Mass. And I think that sense of feeling known and feeling understood, even when I didn't understand myself, right? I mean, I think you could maybe say, like, oh, well, that's just your own self-knowledge. You know, you were aware of who you were or something. But I think we've all experienced plenty of moments where we're like, I don't know what the F is going on in my life. And I feel crazy. But in that space, still having that experience of, like, but I'm known and I'm held by this person. Right. I don't know if that answers your question or just makes it more complicated. But.
No, that's great. No, that's awesome. So you had this encounter, with Christ during adoration, this moment of presence, of being seen, of being kind of held, and of being known in this time of your life when you were, when you were a teenager, so therefore, like, felt like no one knows who I am. So, is that something that, was a singular experience? How did you continue to grow? Like, how did that unfold in your life?
Yeah. So I knew that was something I wanted, and I didn't want it to be a one-time thing. And so I was kind of a weird teenager. I thought this was, like, normal at the time, but later on when I taught high school, even when I was involved in campus ministry, and the kids, like, weren't doing what I did when I was a kid. And I was like, what the heck? Why don't you just pray every day? Why don't you just drive to Mass during the week? And I realized, oh wait, maybe I was just kind of weird. But I don't know. I guess I was kind of a religious kid. And so I wanted to know more. And so I just kept, you know, reading the Bible on a regular basis. I would go to church during the week. The parish, the church where I went to on Sundays with my family, had a room actually dedicated to adoration. And so it was much quieter than that initial experience, right? That was in a gym with like 2,000 people. This, I mean, it was like, I could go with like, I could be in there. I was out there in there alone sometimes, which talk about intimacy, right? I mean, you're in there. Yeah, I was just in there alone and able to just like look, you know, right at God and just tell him what I thought and tell him my worries, my concerns, my fears, and then to be able to read scripture, to look at writings of different Catholic saints, and feel like I was actually getting to know this Jesus who really did, you know, live and move about on the earth. So not only was there this kind of spiritual experience with the Eucharist, but also this encounter with the stories of who Jesus is.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that. So, like you mentioned talking to Jesus, right? And you mentioned reading scripture. When you talk about, you know, talking to Jesus, what does that communication look like? Like, are you, whether it's out loud or inside your head, do you have like an actual dialogue, or how do you both give and receive in that conversation?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's not always audible. Sometimes it is. Or sometimes when I'm praying with other people, then I will pray out loud, right? So then it's something more verbal. But if I'm just by myself, I don't really talk out loud. I just, you know, in some ways it could be similar to thinking, right? Because it's going on in my head, but it's very clearly addressed outward. Right. But so that doesn't mean it's sometimes praying doesn't devolve into thinking, you know? I mean, I think sometimes you start off with like, okay, God, I'm talking to you. And then you like get distracted by something, or you start thinking about, something you're praying about. You're like, oh, should I, or should I not take this job? And then all of a sudden you're like thinking about the pros and cons. And then 20 minutes later, you're like, whoops, Jesus, I think I just shut you out there for the last 15, those minutes. So it's definitely, you know, like going on in, you know, in your head. Yeah, there's something like outward focused to it as well. There's this book about, it's called the Cloud of Unknowing, which kind of mystical text. And it literally describes prayer as like, you're like throwing this spear at this like cloud of unknowing. And sometimes it feels like that, you know, you're just like hurtling things into the void. But other times it can definitely feel more receptive. You know, you mentioned the dialogue piece, but also just trying to like open yourself up, which I guess, that's like kind of difficult to like describe. Right. But just like resting in peace and quiet and stillness and trying to like quiet your mind, from all its like frantic racing. And sometimes it can help to like concentrate on one particular image or one particular phrase, which I think is a pretty universal spiritual practice actually, across different world religions. But, to really focus on one of those and let like the depth of that, emerge. And so I guess listening then isn't like, I mean, Morgan Freeman's voice. I mean, I really only hear that in credit card commercials. So it's not how I hear God. But you know, if you're reading scripture, sometimes like a word or phrase can like jump out or like tug at your heart in a way that it's like, whoa, okay, what's up with that? And then I maybe...
Do you remember a specific time or a specific phrase or verse that may have jumped out at you at some point in time? Like, is there like an early memory of that? Or is there one maybe right now that really you're sitting with?
Gosh. I mean, even today for the Epiphany, when I was praying with that, I mean, it wasn't a word or phrase, but it was a sense that kind of stuck out. So I was like praying about the Epiphany and the wise men. And what struck me was how like the wise men had no idea what they were getting into. You know, and I just kind of, that like caught me. I was like, whoa, like the wise men, you think about it, they like journeyed from like Mesopotamia or Persia or wherever they came from. And like, did they have any idea that they were going to like encounter a baby in a tiny house? Like, probably not. Like, they just have these like mystical texts and their astrology and astronomy to like realize a star is pointing to a king, and they just went, you know? So that idea of like pursuing the unknown stuck with me. So then what I did was I kind of sat with that and was like, okay, God, like, why? Like, why did this strike me? Like, as opposed to something else, right? A lot of other things could have struck me. In the scripture story, right, that the wise men end up going to the king of Israel and talking, that could have stuck out to me, you know, or the wise men actually arriving at Jesus. That could have stuck out to me, but it didn't. Those were just like, meh.
That's all right, God.
And so I sat with that. And so it was like, okay, that jumped out, you know, that tugged at my heart. And so I sat with that a little bit. And so in my mind, that would be God like kind of talking back to me, right? And saying, hey, not in so many words, but like, that's what I want you to really focus on. And so for me, it kind of connected to just some areas of unknown that I'm in my life right now. And so I kind of received some comfort from the fact that, like, you know what, the wise men were doing that too.
As you kind of explore how you have your relationship with God, like, you found yourself in this place of ministry. Tell us a little bit about some of the work that you are doing, this nonprofit that you
started.
Sure.
Yeah. So I've been in ministry for a number of years. I went to college. I got a theology and religious education, or catechetics, technically, degree. And I've been in ministry in the Catholic Church for a number of years. And it's been great. You know, it's been good. It's been a lot of, you know, I was teaching high school, doing campus ministry, helping teenagers encounter Jesus on retreats. And it was great. And I kind of thought I was going to do that for a really long time. Something else to know about me is, I am attracted to women. And so that started happening in high school. And the Catholic Church's teaching on it, I think, is very not fully understood or not fully known by a lot of people. I know a lot of people leave the church over it. But for me, I never wanted to really leave, because I felt like I'd found my home in the church. I'd found my home in the view of the world that I described earlier with my beliefs. And so, yeah, it didn't really majorly, it didn't make me really want to leave the church. There's obviously moments of difficulty, because for those of you that don't know, the church teaches that, like I mentioned earlier, with this vision of creation, right, that the man and woman were created to be helps, to be complements to one another, and that both the male and the female are manifestations of the image and likeness of God, and that together they image God in a particular way. And so in that regard, relationships, romantic relationships between two men or between two women aren't really, they kind of go against the identity of the male, of the female, and their complementary nature. And so as such, those relationships are kind of off the mark of God's plan for creation. And so,
let me ask you a question. And I know that was kind of I knew that, just like FYI for everybody listening, that's not news to me. I do know Anne. I knew that, that she does. Even if it was like, okay. I'm curious about this. Was the intellectual understanding of that ever a tension for you? Like, when you were a teenager, right? When you were first experiencing, same-sex attraction, did you care about the church's intellectual response? Mm-hmm. Was there a journey through that, or was it just a sense of, this is where I belong, so this is where I belong?
Like, yeah. What was that for you? Quick pause for those of you that don't know what I'm doing. The nonprofit I'm founding is related to this issue. So that's why this, hence the whole story and the dovetailing into my experience. I think there was this like deep adherence on the level of the intellect. I love to read, and my faith obviously was one in the heart, but I also thought a lot about it in my head. And so for a long time, it actually didn't. I mean, there was definitely moments of some angst in certain friendships, because you're like, I think I might like you. But it wasn't super challenging. There was a friendship in college where it ended up being really codependent, and I basically kind of realized, shit, I think I'm in love with this girl, you know? And then the friendship kind of, I was about to say the friendship broke up, but it wasn't really an actual relationship, but the friendship kind of fell apart for a number of reasons. And after that, I kind of really recognized this as maybe a source of angst or of tension in my life. Especially when it, like, that tendency, like, didn't really go away. I think when I was in high school and I experienced it, I was like, oh, well, this will eventually just go away. La, 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 living my life. But then, like, as the more the years went on and the more I, kept being drawn to different female friends in my life or attracted to different women, there was kind of a moment of reckoning that, like, gradually unfolded that was like, okay, this isn't probably going to stop. Like, this might, I don't know how long this is going to go on. Like, I kind of, yeah. And so I guess to your point, Tony, like, yeah, I mean, there's definitely moments of tension or, different points, you know, as your other friends, like, start to get married and start to settle in different, in their lives, you kind of wonder, okay, is this going to happen? Like, when is this going to happen for me? Is it ever going to happen for me? You know, because I also do experience attraction to men, it's less frequently. I think I'm getting a little rambly, but the point is, yes, there has been tension.
That's all right,
points.
That's all right.
Do you have a follow-up question or do you...
You don't know. So for me, it was like, you know, whatever part we talked about, I like to let the conversation kind of evolve naturally. So that's where it came up. I was just really, I mean, it really is just kind of curious to me because, I think anybody who has faith in anything deeply, anything they can't see, there's always going to be something that around mm-hmm. that creates a tension, right? Like, so whether you're gay, whether you're straight, you know, like whatever your sexual orientation is, that may be part of it. For a lot of people, it may not be. It may just be like, I really love food. Like, food is delicious and I like to eat it. And when I feel bad, I like to eat more food. Or when I'm stressed, I like to eat more food. Like, so, like, for me, one of the biggest disorders in my life, right? Like, it's not an eating disorder. Like, one of the biggest things that is not in proper order in my life is my relationship with food, right? And so, that's a big thing for me. And it's not a big thing for a lot of people. So regardless of anything, like I said, there's going to be those tensions. So I was just curious, like, but that's the thing, being fat, like, you know, or being overweight isn't a reason culturally right now that people are like, ugh, the church, they hate fat people, right? Like, that's not a conversation that's happening in our culture. And so I was really just more concerned, curious whether it was intellectual or whether it was a relationship or whether it was just a sense of belonging or whether it was just a mix of all those things. But no, I think you answered it really well. And I really appreciate that. But no, so you had these experiences, right? Both of deep faith, of tracking through that. You have these moments of tension. But through all that, you've maintained your Catholicity. And now you started this this not-for-profit. And so tell us a little bit about that
work. Yeah, so like you're mentioning, right? I think there's a lot of just confusion right now in the culture and in the world at large about what the church teaches. I think there's people within the church that are like, wait, what? And we just, like, people just, I think, don't know what to do. Because it can seem like the church's teaching is harsh, right? Or it's denying people love or something like that. And so I think the church gets a bad rap in a lot of ways for that teaching, especially when it's divorced from that broader picture that I described earlier. And like you said, the reality that we're all falling short of the broader picture in one way or another. And it's probably not fair that one area of it is getting additional attention, both secularly and within the church, right? Because like you're mentioning, there's lots of areas where the order of creation isn't fully lived out in each of our lives. So I think as a result, there's a lot of people who are in the church, right, who are in the pews right now, who don't know if they belong there because of the way it's being talked about, right? Or not being talked about. It's like, well, does anyone even know? Like, does anyone know that I deal with this? Is it safe for me to tell people that I'm experiencing this? Or if it's like talked with a harshness or it's like, okay, well, is this even, would I even be welcomed if I said that this was a feeling that I had, right? Because in some places, there's no distinction made between feelings, which as Catholics, any feeling that we experience isn't good or bad. It just is a feeling, right? I mean, that's basic moral theology. But that distinction isn't always made, you know, from the pulpit or in different areas. And so people can think, well, I have these feelings, that means I'm bad, which is not true. But some people think that the church would say that. And so what we want to do is just to be able to kind of get the message out there about the fullness of the church's teaching, and also to show that just an abundant and joyful life is possible, even though it might seem like, well, if I have these attractions and I can't act on them, I have these desires and I can't act on them romantically, then my life is going to be shit. But that's not the case. And so I love my life. Honestly, Tony, just to be honest with you, I've like never really had a serious relationship in my life. I mean, I've dated casually and nothing's quite panned out. But I love my life. Like, I love my life. I love all the goodness that God has brought into it. And so this isn't an imposition, right? This isn't some kind of like propaganda or something, but it's an invitation to consider a perspective. It's an invitation to consider the fullness of the church's teaching. It's an invitation to consider what your life would look like if you lived the fullness of the church's teaching about and the depths and the complexity of who you are, right? So that's what we want to do. And so we've got a website, www.edeninvitation.com. And so we offer just different resources on there. We've got plans to continue to expand and grow that community. For now it's pretty basic, but
tell me about the hope for that. Cause I think a lot of people, especially a lot of people out there, when they look at, the state of discussions around homosexuality, same-sex attraction, same-sex experience, whatever we're gonna call it, gender identity, all these different things, right, that are complex and have social elements, religious elements, identity elements, political, like all these different multifaceted things, people can feel really, really hopeless about this, or like the things are massively polarized. And so for you guys, what would your hope be in the middle of that? Like, what would you guys, if you had to name, like, hey, in 3 to 5 years, even if it's small, like here's some of the things we hope that the Eden Invitation would be able to be doing or would be focused on in the middle of all this stuff, what would that be?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the first thing would be solidarity. You know, I think I would want people who are kind of wrestling with their sexual identity, the orientation of their desires, to feel like that they don't have this like special weird thing that the church treats differently than other desires, you know, but that they would know like, okay, like it's okay for me to like, to talk about this with friends. It's okay for me to be vulnerable about this. I can feel in solidarity with people who don't experience these attractions. And the same thing that for people who don't experience those attractions, that they wouldn't feel like, oh my gosh, this is a special thing. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to talk to people. I don't know how to answer this question in my youth group. But they would feel a solidarity of like, no, like, you know what? That might not be my thing, but I've got a thing too. And I can have empathy and use my imagination a little bit to think about what this might be like for you. And we can walk together.
Could you give me like, okay, what are the couple of questions, you know, that you get asked on a regular basis about from people who just don't know how to interact around this issue? So if solidarity is a main focus, if people feeling comfortable and knowing like that we are one, like regardless of our sexual orientation, like here's our common identity. Like we are one as a human family, but we are also one as a body of believers. You know, like you don't have to feel weird around me. What are the things you would say to the average person who's asking you questions, or what are some of the questions you get and how would you answer them?
Okay. Honestly, the one that's springing to mind, it's super generic, but I get it a lot, is people saying like, I don't know what to do. Like that's more of a statement than a question. But I guess the question is what do I do? Like, how do I walk with someone? Or if someone comes out to me, what do I say? How do I approach it? I think that's probably the most common question. Yeah, and I think that the first answer would, so the answer would be to first of all, like, establish and remind the person of your love for them, your gratitude for their vulnerability. And then also asking to hear their story. Because I think so often, and this is why I think people get in a tiff about what labels we want to use, but I think it's easy for us if someone says, like, I'm gay or I'm attracted to the same sex. Like, I think we immediately, people just assume, like, oh, I know what that means. Oh, it means you're just, like, attracted to the same sex. That's great. Like, but really what's actually being shared in that moment is there's a whole story there, right? Of how the person came to understand that. There's a whole story there of, like, just probably difficult points of, like, longing going unmet. Like, maybe there's stories there of, like, just bad relationships in family or among siblings. There's a story there perhaps of being bullied. There's a story there of a desire for love, right? There's a whole complexity waiting to be unpacked, and to ask about that. You know, don't just say, thanks for telling me, I still love you, let's go get coffee and talk about whatever you're watching on Netflix. I don't know. I don't, like, ever watch Netflix, so I can't even list a show. But to ask those questions, like, okay, yeah, like, so tell me, like, okay, how did you come to experience that? You know, like, wow, like, what's been difficult about this for you? How's your family received it? Have you told your family yet? You know, what, you know, to ask those sorts of questions to understand more of the story behind that revelation. And then I guess where you go within the walking with would kind of depend on whether they're a person of faith or not, and how that works and how they would integrate that. So I'll just pause there.
So that's fine. One last question. So for somebody maybe who, like, so if you had to talk to yourself from a decade ago, so if there was a Catholic young person out there who you could speak to, like, through this medium, I don't, you know, who's experiencing same-sex attraction, who's questioning their sexual identity, who's out, right? And doesn't know what to do with that. And the fact that they are associated with the Catholic faith, what would you want to say to yourself or to them from 10 years later?
Life is bigger. I wish someone had told me that when I was younger, because I think it can be very easy to fixate on this, especially in our culture that's so obsessed with romantic love and finding romantic love, which no matter who you want, I think we've all loved and lost and figured out that I think there's actually more to romantic love in life, though it is good and it's beautiful. But I think, like we do need to give credence to this. We do need to reflect on it and sort through it, but sort through it in the context of everything else, you know? Don't forget to, like, explore your hobbies. Like, don't forget to, like, be there for your friends that are struggling. Like, live your full life. Like, this is a piece of it. Absolutely. But it's a piece. It's not the entirety. It's not the whole.
Yeah. I think about all of my friends who I know who I've lost because they let an aspect of their life become their everything. Right. Like, and this is not around sexuality specifically, like, but who I've watched it break families, friendships, entire communities, individual lives. When somebody lets one aspect of who they are, that refuses to acknowledge any other part of them, like, dominate everything, because they feel like if they find an answer to that one question that's sitting in their heart, that everything will resolve for them. And so I love that response of life is bigger. Like, it's not just this one question that if you have an answer to is going to solve everything. It's all these things. And at the center of that, it's you and it's a relationship, and it's not that, you know. And so I love that. So that's awesome. So I take away so much of this, and I, like I said, I know you and I could probably talk for much longer, but I just want to thank you so much for being on here today. Because I take away so much, always like to offer just kind of two things to our guests at the end. And the first is that if you have a question for me, I'd be happy to answer it. And if you don't, that's totally okay.
Oh my, yeah. What is one of the most beautiful things you've experienced?
It's one of the most beautiful things that I have experienced.
Yeah, that just was like, life is meaningful, you know, like that beauty, like, boom, spoke to the meaning and goodness of life.
Yeah. So I have a background as a youth worker. I also have a background doing church work, church ministry. And I have this real fixation with just watching people grow, being able to contribute that, but also at some point being able to release it and say, like, there's so much more to this than me, right? Like, I'm not the one doing this. I'm facilitating a part of it. I'm connected to it. I'm feeding it in some way, shape, or form, but I myself could not do that. When I get to experience those moments, that for me is beautiful. So like a couple of episodes ago, we had a young person, Claire, on. She's not young anymore. She's probably your age. It's like, she's a full on adult. but she was one of my teams for my program. So like working with young people and watching somebody come in who has like no idea who they are, no idea what they think, no idea what they believe, who maybe angry, maybe happy, maybe confused, maybe sad, maybe whatever. And watching things like start to click for them on a retreat, on a trip, on a youth night, when I pray with them, when I talk with them, watching their life take shape. Doing the same thing through like with adults who are coming into the church. I run this program called Alpha, which happens all over the place that, I love that I get to journey with people for like 10 weeks as they wrestle with some of life's biggest questions and going from like week one, right, to week 10, like the relationships that are formed there, the community that's formed, but also just watching the change that happens in people's lives. And I would say all of those things have been immensely beautiful. Whether they happen in a secular context or in a religious context. But one of the most beautiful things is like, I'm now getting to experience that within the context of my own family. Like, so my oldest kids are starting to figure out in a very deeper way who I am, like how I interact with the world and starting to frame those things. And those are not always pleasant conversations, but when they're good, they're so much better. And the difference is like, pouring 10 weeks into somebody versus pouring 14 years into somebody. I don't think it necessarily, I mean, certainly the fact that they're my kids helps, but watching people just come to know a little bit more clearly, like who they are and what makes them tick. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I do the podcast, right? Like that to me is beautiful. Like that sense of clarity and self-assurance. And part of it's probably my own neurosis around those same things. Like, I don't always feel clear on that myself. And so when I see other people finding those things, it actually helps resonate a little bit of clarity for me. And so there's a deep beauty to that, that really resonates primarily from the truth that that person is encountering. Like, I know this thing now, and it's something that's bigger than I am, but it's something that I touch. And that's, I love that in all the different contexts. So that's not a specific moment, because it'd be hard to relay the specifics of the moment, but those are the moments to me that are the most beautiful. And so then the other thing is, would you be comfortable if I prayed for you?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. So let's do that. The Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. God, we just thank you for Anna. We thank you for the work that she's doing, the gift that she is, as an awkward church kid who was in love with you and I didn't even know who you were. I thank you for other awkward church kids who have become adults, and who are serving, in the Vineyard. I just thank you for the heart for mission you've given her, for the struggles, the challenges, the tensions you've placed in her life that have refined her, that have pushed her, that have drawn her more deeply into a relationship with you and given her clarity around what you desire for. God, we pray for solidarity. We pray that as a people, that your creation would be drawn together and understand that you have created us in your image and likeness for goodness, for truth, and for beauty. We also want us to understand that as your church, you have created us for the love of all humankind and the drawing together of all your people. We ask you to bless the Eden Invitation, the work it's doing, but we specifically ask you to bless Anna and all the ways that you're calling her. And that's all this through Christ our Lord. Amen. Mm-hmm. Now, Anna, if people want to find out a little bit more about Eden Invitation, tell them one more time, what's the best way to do that, or if they want to connect with you?
Yeah, so you can find us at www.edeninvitation.com. like the Garden of Eden, edeninvitation.com. We're also on Instagram and Facebook with that. And then you can contact us through a message, or you can also email us through our website.
Awesome. Now, if you guys will stick around for just a little bit, I'm going to sit down with my good friend, Father Colin Parrish, and we're going to talk about what we took away from Anna's conversation. And we'll look forward to chatting with you guys soon.
All right. Thanks, Tony. Thanks for the opportunity to be on.
Guys, before we jump into our post-interview conversation, this is Tony Vicenda.
Hey, I'm Father Colin Parrish.
And I asked Father Colin Parrish to do an ad read for you guys, but he doesn't know how to keep things tight. So I just wanted to talk to you for just 1 second about how it's our birthdays. Father Colin Parrish, happy birthday.
Hey, happy birthday to you.
So it's our birthday week and our birthday month. And I know that you guys have been thinking like, okay, we love this podcast. We love these guys. What are we going to get him for our birthday? I know it's kept you up late at night. And here's what we would love. We would love to have you go to our Patreon, which is going to be in the show notes of this episode, but it's also at patreon.com/thethresholdpodcast. And consider if what we're doing resonates with you, if you like it, if you want to support us, if you want to help us out, we would love to have you become a patron. And just let us know that you care, that you like what you're doing, that we'd love to see more of it happening, but also how much you want to get just some free goodies if you pledge at a higher level.
Just think about it. You're going to the shop, coffee shop, you're buying a cold brew for yourself. Buy us an extra cold brew on Patreon.
Welcome back, everybody. Every week on The Threshold, after I sit down with my guest, I then am joined by my good buddy, Father Colin Parrish, who's pouring himself a delightful glass of Four Roses single barrel bourbon right now. I've got a little bit of St. Remy cognac going. Cheers. Cheers, Father Parrish. I'm really excited to sit down with you and just chat a little bit about what you took away from my conversation with Anna. I actually got to talk with her right after Mass on Sunday, pretty much came home, made lunch for the kids, and just sat down and got to chat with her about what was going on. So what stood out at you from the conversation?
You know, just like our friends who consider themselves non-epistemic atheists.
Okay.
I think is the term. So Tim and Brad.
Okay.
She's somebody who I'd want to get a beer with.
Yeah.
I think Anna like had a really, I think there were two primary things that I'd like to comment on. One is that, I'm sure she would be able to kind of articulate this for herself, but just as the way conversations go, it doesn't always come out, get sussed out in this kind of way. But is that the beautiful part that I resonated with the most is that her experience of Christ and his love and this ability to kind of seek that out was really the motivating factor for her life and has continued to be so.
Yeah.
And that's what seems to define her experience and her understanding of herself and the world. So that's something that I just really wanted to, of course, affirm, and that I can resonate with just in my own experience. The other thing which didn't come out in my interview, again, when interviews just go the way they go,
right?
Conversations go the way they go. One of the things that I didn't focus on was that for me, for her, she has a very positive experience of how the faith expresses itself in relation to what it means to be human.
Yeah. Right?
Short terminology for that is sexual teachings.
Right.
And so her experiences of those are more or less basically like super positive because of her experiences of Christ, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right.
Yeah.
And for me, one of the things that she really kind of talked about it was just this understanding of herself, right? And for me, at least, like, I could resonate with her experience on the level of, all right, like, when I became Catholic, when I had my conversion, one of the most beautiful things was actually finding out about sexual teachings, because they really helped me understand who I am, mm-hmm. and they helped express the sadness that I felt, right? Like, I never felt condemned for my behavior, right? Like, that I had.
Right, because I mean, for people who are maybe just tuning in, you were a man's man, a man about town back in the day. Is that a fair?
No, no, I was an emo kid with a lot of needs, and then I used people to fulfill those needs. Right. It had nothing to do with
man's man, ladies' man, man about town, emo kid, same thing.
Yeah, and so I. For me, it was like, you know, the sexual teachings felt liberating to me because they had this, this ability to describe, like I said, my sadness and what it was I was looking for.
Right.
And so I felt extremely liberated by that and understandable to myself.
What do you think is one of the most surprising things what do you think would surprise people the most about the church's teachings on sex?
I think the most surprising thing for me, at least, about the church's sexual teaching was that it's meant to make you experience humanity on an intense level of how to be in relationship with people, mm-hmm. That is meant to bring peace and life in every circumstance.
Right.
And so, and also that the sexual teachings are not necessarily just meant to be relegated to, you know, the plumbing, as it were.
Right. Right.
Like it's not just really about like, oh, like if I just use my parts in this way, then X, Y, and Z will happen. It's actually more about like, a total orientation of view towards each person you're in relationship with, regardless of whether or not it's a sexual relationship.
Hmm.
Like, because I don't do anything as a non-sexed being. I do everything as a sexual being.
Right. Right.
And so how is it that I can have, right, like, love and charity for somebody is going to be expressed.
Yeah. I think that's really interesting. I think it's really interesting to hear that coming from you also too, as somebody who's living a life of celibacy. Right. And so I almost kind of wanted to talk with Anne a little bit about that. Again, we were pressed for time. I could have talked to her for another 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like, easy and not exhausted the things I wanted.
It also hits on the third point actually that I wanted to, I was really attracted to.
Okay.
But I'll let me
share this first. So like I did Anna's interview, and I actually have done our interview for next week with Haley Smith also, that I'm really excited about. Haley comes from a Mormon background, and we'll cover that thing. But even in talking to her,
I've had a lot of conversations with Mormons. Damn.
Yeah. Lately. Yeah. A couple different people like, but the big thing that stood out to me from some of those conversations is this kind of, how celibacy operates in the context of our modern culture is not so much a confusion to me, but how celibacy operates in the context of what you just said. Like we are sexual creatures, right? Like that's part of the way that God has made us, or that we believe God's made us. And so I think it's really interesting when you get into some of those things. Like I kind of wanted to ask Anna a little bit more about like, what is it like to be called to a life of celibacy from the church on what seems to be circumstance, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I think people would look at the difference between you, your call to celibacy. That's something that you discerned over an extended period of time that you were formed for, and then you made a choice to commit to a life devoted to the common good through the priesthood, so which includes, you know, celibacy, chastity, mm-hmm. all those things. Just like married life includes chastity, but with one's spouse, right? And so I think the most people would look at Anna's situation and be like, well, you know, the church teaches you're called to chastity and celibacy also potentially, right? If you're experiencing same-sex attraction, but that seems way more circumstantial.
Yeah. And therefore like unfair.
Right. Like, I mean, reality, if you believe in God, then like God has this plan for you to experience peace and joy in life. And so neither is more circumstantial than the other, but I just, I do wonder about how people approach that in today's day and age. And that's one of the areas I wish we would have had a little bit more time to get into. But I was just really blown away also too. And then we'll go to your third point after that. It's very rare that I encounter a Catholic who from a young age can identify a sense of place with their faith. Right. People in general, she's gone on a searching process. Like she's wrestled with stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. But at no point did she felt like that meant a departure. And in today's society, I feel like we feel whatever our family's faith of origin is, whether that's atheist, whether that's Christian, whether that's Catholic, whether that's, Mormon, whether it's Buddhist, whether it's Hindu, whatever, when we go on these searching phases that we do at some point as we kind of start to ask questions, I think there oftentimes is this sense that requires departure. Like I can't stay in this place and wrestle with things, or I can't stay in this place and ask questions. And I find it really rare when you encounter somebody who stayed in their faith of origin while wrestling with these big things. And and for me, that is the case. Even though I explored a lot of other things, like I never departed Catholicism. I did a lot of things I shouldn't have done, but I never was like, I would never have not identified as Catholic. And that's really interesting to me because I rarely meet people who have that same situation. And so it was kind of this like little hidden gem that I wasn't expecting.
Yeah. And I think that that was part of the thing that attracts me to her is that she has an attraction to Christ. Right. And like, I could understand her experience. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, so towards the end, she was saying that like, you got to have a little bit of imagination here and like, see that like somebody who has desires for someone of their same sex or whatever, right? Like you got to have a little imagination and put yourself in their shoes, right? I honestly do not have any kind of like problem or hang up imagining. Like I don't really see much of the difference between her experience and mine. Mm. Right. And I'm a cisgendered heterosexual male, right? So I struggle with my orientation.
Mm.
Right? I have struggles with the fact that I'm attracted to women, right? And that doesn't change whether I'd be married or celibate, dude, or if I was single, right? Yeah. What does it mean for me to love people that I'm sexually attracted to, women that I'm sexually attracted to, in a way that is going to A, reveal Christ, B, bring about the fullness of their humanity more.
Yeah.
Right. And like, what is it like? That's not significantly going to be different if I was attracted to men, for example.
Yeah. And I should say, like, I don't necessarily know that I think vocational state changes that also too. Like, I mean, the reality is like straight married men, straight single men, straight, whatever your orientation or whoever you're attracted to, the question is like, how are you helping that person experience life more deeply? Right. Like how are you drawing them into more goodness? Right. How are you helping them have more? Like So cutting back to that, like, that actually really resonates closely with it. When I asked Anna, like, what was the one thing she wished like somebody would have told her that she would say to somebody, like, this concept of life is bigger, right? I think lots of times when we're confronted by somebody who we feel an attraction to, and for some reason that feels like awkward or weird, we don't know how to deal with it. Rather than just trying to like put it in its proper context, we try to seek out like the resolution of that. And so we can unhealthily fixate on that. And I just,
yeah, because at the end of the day, it's like for me, I need to know how to love somebody.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't think that who I have desires for dictates on its own, right, like the method of truly loving.
Yeah.
Right. Because at the end of the day, I believe that every human person is made for is made for God, right? To know God, to know, love, and serve God, right? In this life and the next. Great. Thanks, Baltimore Catechism. Which I didn't grow up with, whatever, but
right.
I find it pithy. But also that they're made for a fulfillment of humanity, a freedom, a newness of life through relationship, right? And so, like, which usually requires me sacrificing for somebody and loving them with an abandonment without necessarily receiving something from them in return, right?
Yeah, because otherwise it's transactional.
And so if that's the primary way of helping, of cultivating somebody's humanity through that kind of sacrificial love, that, you know, that means that I'm going to love them in a certain way. And that may end up leading me down the road of, you know, not having sexual relationships with them.
More than likely to lead you,
at least for me personally, right. You know, like, as a celibate priest. But
well, I mean, you know, theoretically, like with our faith background, like that's going to be the case with like 7 billion people on the planet who you might encounter, and may not be the case with any, or may not be the case with one. Right. Like, so like, that's the margin of degree. Like, you know, like that's, I think, the thing that we get caught up in a whole lot.
So the last thing that I was that was really like just nice to hear from her is, one is also like, you know, well, anyway, I won't go down that tack yet, but, as I was listening, I was reminded of a conversation I had like years ago, with an acquaintance from college. And I, you know, I actually should probably like follow up with her. It's been years. But she's a smart, super smart gal, right? Oh, like I have a good intellect and hers is miles beyond mine.
Yeah.
And which is rare for me to find, like, people whose intellects are like,
you're very smart.
What we mean is like, look, this is just a belief of mine that has nothing to do with God. Right. I believe that, of the total population of humanity, a good 40% are very, very smart. Right. Mm-hmm. I think that there's 5% or less of the population that are light years ahead of that.
Okay.
Right. That are just general geniuses of existence. Right. I think she's one of those geniuses.
Yeah.
And it's just beautiful to look at, right? You're like, oh my gosh, like I just take glory in the fact that you have such an intellect. Anyway, she had come to the faith through intellectual conversations, right? And she converted and had a really big, anyway. But, you know, it later came out that she was like, that she didn't know emotionally and spiritually how to deal with the fact that she desired to be in sexual relationships with women. Right. Like that was her circumstance. So I initially was like, as she came to me and she was talking, and we found ourselves in Renton, Washington, walking around downtown Renton, which is
Renton.
Yeah. Which is maybe, I don't know, maybe it's like Allen, Texas. I don't know. I've never been to Allen. So.
No, it's not like Allen, Texas.
It's like a treed or like a forested version of El Paso.
Okay.
Anyway, just talking about her circumstance, and I was trying to like, you know, spar with her in a good way, in a healthy way, on the intellectual level. And she just kept putting up boundaries and roadblocks there. And I was able to dance, but I realized like, this is getting us nowhere. Right. So we finally sat down on a flatbed truck at a rental place. And I just said to her, look, like the real question in front of us is, how is it that we're meant to love somebody? Mm-hmm. Like, what is going to, like, this girl that you love, right, that you're falling in love with, like, how do you love her? Like, what is going to be her greatest good? And how is it that you can live that? And like, that was really the crux of the issue, right, at the end of the day for any relationship. And I still remember that as being like a really graced moment for myself. And
what if we asked ourselves that question with everybody we encountered? Like,
yeah,
how am I supposed to love this person? Right. How am I supposed to love this person in front of me? And just were willing to actually not just ask ourselves that question, but then respond to it.
Yeah. Because like, for me, what ends up happening is that I have to ask myself, is a sexual relationship necessary for me personally to love somebody?
Right.
So, and the reason I even bring any of this conversation up in relation to Anna's interview is that she understands that she too can have a full life without having sexual relationships, right? And I've had to come across that too. Mm-hmm. And what I've had to realize is that, okay, granted, yeah, I chose this life, quote unquote, right? I mean, I could say, like, look, God chose me and I said yes to this. But for the sake of conversation, yeah, I chose this life. And even if somebody else did not choose their circumstances about like who they desire and who they're attracted to, you still have to ask yourself the question at the end of the day, like, is that, am I hanging my happiness on one kind of, circumstance where, like, is it really true that this one person or this one kind of love is going to totally fulfill me?
Hmm.
And I have to deal with that as a celibate man on a daily basis, right? And it's not, and it's circumstantial, right? It is circumstantial at that point, right? I don't really have that much of a different experience when you look at it from the ground level.
Yeah.
So.
That's awesome. Anything you want to say to Anna before we close out?
I guess, like, my question for her is, like, what is your experience? Because she's a Catholic, practicing Catholic. I feel like it can be more direct. How is it that your relationship with Christ fulfills your humanity?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, in the sense of the fact that, like, is it true that your relationship with Christ answers your flesh?
Yeah.
Is that a possibility? Is that true? Mm-hmm. And that's more of an, like, it's more of an experiential question.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great question. So I just want to know, my question is just like, when are Anna and I going to get to hang out?
Totally. She, Anna, y'all need to come out here.
Yeah.
That would be absolutely great.
So, and for the rest of you guys, we would love to hang out with you sometime. So if you are ever in the North Seattle area, you need to drop Father Parrish and I a line. We'd love to hang out.
We could go to Daryl's. You could go to the cabin,
barrels, listen to some jazz, go to the Stumbling Monk. You can go
to Fuss Saigon.
Yeah. Any of those things. But until next time, or until we see you at one of those places, get out there, F and F ability, and talk about what really matters.
Bye.